What's funny is that I'll push like start record, and then it takes like 5 to 10 seconds to actually start recording before it starts recording. It's
I'm
my
sure that
favorite
was,
thing.
I'm sure that was a tough lesson to learn.
Yeah, it's my favorite thing. I love it. I love it so much.
I run into that Adobe Audition has this bad habit because I'll record my podcast in the studio, my sports podcast I do with a couple coworkers. And if I don't leave enough space, like blank space at the end of the audio when I mail it to myself to goof with it and post it later, it'll cut it off.
Love that for you.
Gotta leave like 20 seconds of silence.
Jeez, love that for
Obnoxious.
you. Isn't technology the best thing ever?
The best. I was freaking out because I was traffic was stupid, and then I was like, "Oh my gosh! Of course, there's technical difficulties. I don't know what the hell's going on."
It's totally fine. We figured it out. But welcome everybody back to Finding My Perfect Awkward. With me this week, I am so excited. It's AJ Knight. How are you doing, AJ?
Good. I'm excited to be on here. To be honest, I've been jealous because I've seen a few of our radio friends be on here, and I'm glad to join the episodes, the podcast.
I'm so happy that you said yes.
I just put off that big shot vibe. Is that what it is?
I knew I was going to get to you because I've been wanting to have you on. So I'm just so happy that you said yes.
Thank you for inviting me.
So I want to get to know you. So, what I know, we're going to go down the list of what I know. What I know is that you have a morning show in Utah called AJ and McCall, correct?
Yes, I do.
Okay. How did you get into radio? What is your story like? What's your, like, how do you love your morning show? Give me all the details.
So I'm super lucky. My high school, so I'm originally from Lafayette, Indiana. I went to Lafayette Jefferson High School, and it has a radio and closed circuit television station in the school. And I was lucky enough to get into that class, and I did that for almost 3 years. And then my college, Purdue University, had a they have a NPR station that is filled by student volunteers. And my high school has a good reputation, so that was all I needed to get in there. And that was sort of my first paying gig. It was, if for anyone unfamiliar with public radio, it's not really like on the radio. You do like this programming has been brought to you in part by, and you got to talk like it's really annoying, but it's good for enunciation. And then I was able to turn that into an internship at Artistic Media Partners was the company at the time, which is my hometown station. They had three FMs and an AM. And then I worked my way basically, kind of long story short, from intern to board op to night shift to sports director to program director. And then I was on all the stations. And then I worked in New Mexico for a year. Then I went home, and then I got the job out here, which is coming in on 5 years. And it terrified me because I have voice tracked mornings before, but I've never done mornings before. And I had been out of radio for 7 months when I got this job. And the first day I was on, I'm sure terrible. My heart's just crazy, but I'm sure it was terrible. And the owner of the company went to my boss, my program director, and goes, "Yeah, I don't know if this guy's gonna cut it." I was like, "Okay, hold on.
Oh no.
One day, come on, one day." But I started in January. I did it for 5 months, and then they hired McCall, and we've been doing the AJ McCall show since June 1st of 2017. And really just kind of accidental success is what I would call whatever we have, because we clicked pretty quickly, and I think we're able to riff off of each other pretty well. And so we had no idea what we were doing, because I at 5 months in still had no idea what I was doing. And then we were like, "I don't know." And then we went to boot camp a month after we got paired together, and we're like, "Okay, we'll talk about us." And luckily we are found at least moderately interesting enough that we can talk about her experiences being from here, me being an absolute train wreck of a human being for a good majority of my life, and just kind of be open and honest with our lives, which I think people find refreshing in general, but specifically in the state of Utah, because I've come to find it's a little bit, it's not so much closed off. I think it's just harder to get into the real stuff. People are
For
very
sure.
guarded about it.
Well, and I think with radio too, in general, a lot of people like to relate to certain things and don't like to admit to certain things. So it's nice to hear a voice saying, "Hey, oh my God, I can relate to what you're saying, and I didn't think anybody else, went through that or thought that or did that." So.
Yeah, I've come to find that one of my all the whatever achievements or success that I sort of have, one of my fondest memories and something I'll hold super dear, I like to write. And for a while I was writing on the station website, and I've since moved it over to my own website when our websites crashed. But I was writing on the station website, and I have this book at home. And I don't know if Project Excel is a thing for any other state, but in Indiana, they had this thing called Project Excel, and it was supposed to basically be this competition where just anything artistic, writing, sculpting, whatever, they had like a statewide competition. Well, I thought about getting into it and I didn't, but I got this book out of it. It was a hardcover black book that just had blank pages. And when I was in college, in about a 6-month span, I had a very bad breakup, and then I got disowned by my own mom. And I was just in a super, super dark place. So I found it really cathartic, but also I just wrote in that during that time because I wasn't sleeping really at all. And I found it that it was really easy to deal with, because it felt like writing the terrible things that I was thinking into that book kind of cleared my mind a little bit. And I got through it. I got into therapy, thank God. My dad was great about that. But I wrote about that. I wrote the piece called My Black Book, and I talked about that period of time and how dark it was for me. And someone actually read it and messaged me on Twitter and told me that it was really inspiring, and it was exactly what they needed to find to get help themselves. And I don't think it matters whatever I do and whatever the rest of my radio career looks like to connect with someone on that individual level and change someone's life like that. Like, nothing will ever beat that. It was amazing, because I think for me, when I'm in radio, you're supposed to have a conversation with one person. So it's easy when I have a co-host, 'cause I'm just talking to her and we're kind of just like having everybody like in the car or at the break room or whatever. So it's really easy to do, but being able to have someone choose to read something I wrote and then to get that out of it was just, I can't put it into words.
Well, and something so personal and something so like, I mean, I'm sure you've heard this before, but like being so brave as to share something like that with somebody else, and for, again, somebody to relate to it. That's something that not really any other medium can do other than writing, or other than even sometimes radio. Because talking and just hearing another person talk just to you, you know, just to the one person, or just, you know, to your co-host.
It's funny.
It's relatable.
Yeah, it's funny because I talk about that on the show sometimes. And when we get into like the podcast kind of off air, we have a little bit more freedom to kind of just get off track. But I talk about it a lot. People, I think, and it's meant to be funny because I've done a lot of stupid stuff in my life. And it's easy, like I can make fun of myself so we can all go back and laugh at me. But I talk about that too. Like, one of the things, when people ask me why I do radio, like one of the things is I say, well, I feel like I've lived an interesting enough life and I'm okay talking about it. And if it helps people either not make the stupid decisions I made or help you see through them, then I'm perfectly good with it. It's one of the things, like, microphone therapy has been like a legit thing for me for so long doing radio.
That's what this podcast has become for me.
Well, I'm glad to take part.
I gotta be honest. Yeah, I gotta be honest. Well, this and Free For All, of course, have been an outlet for a lot of people. But it's when you find that medium, whether it's writing or talking, podcasting, a digital fake TV game show, like whatever your medium is, once you find it, that's like, it becomes like your safe space, your safe haven. And it becomes like that thing that you feel the most comfortable releasing into as far as emotions and your experiences. And you're like, okay, well, even if nobody ever reads it or nobody ever hears it, at least I'm able and I feel comfortable enough with myself to share it and, you know, accept myself enough to, you know, release that up my mind. Which I think, like, that's where I want to get to with my radio career, I think, is being comfortable enough with myself and with my own voice enough to share stories and become relatable.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny. It wasn't until I got to do mornings that was the case for me. Like, I never, well, that's not totally true. Like, I think I was guarded about certain things, but I, you know, I worked in a lot of small places, so I didn't have the right type of, I guess, leadership or guidance along the way that was like, this is what you need to do. And I have mentors that have been really great about it, but I think it's one of those things where like they could say it, but until I like truly did it and chose to do it, like I didn't really get into it. And it wasn't until I got to Utah where I was like, oh, I don't like, I have this really bad habit of almost starting fires in my house all the time. So it's become this like recurring thing on our morning show. It's like, hey, guess how I almost started a fire this weekend. But it, like, it's stupid. And thank goodness I didn't, you know, didn't cause any property damage or whatever. I did once in college, and that's how this whole thing started. But like, I think once I chose to do that, it just became so much easier. And then it was like, this is all I want to do. Because the other thing is it becomes so much easier to, I think, to put the show together. Cause people ask all the time, like, how do you come up with material? And our joking / half serious answer is, and I say it all the time, is I try to leave a semi interesting life and then just talk about it. But the truth of the matter is I think a lot of times, like, I'm willing to go on the air and just say something that I did that was stupid this weekend. Like, we had a conversation, so dumb. We had a conversation the other day where we were talking about a dumb criminal story where a dude stole a street sweeper. And then I was like, we got out of the story. And then I was like, guy's an idiot. Everyone knows if you're going to steal a piece of construction equipment, it's the pushy one with the shield and the scoopy one. And I was like, yes, these are the most descriptive terms ever. I'm an idiot. I don't know what they are, but that's what they are.
Is that the one with the claw that like reaches in the ground and picks up all the dirt to move it?
I figured out excavator. Yes.
Oh, I had no idea that that's what that was called. You could have said that by itself and I would have been like, please describe. I don't know.
But like, it's just, it's fun. And I don't know if you found it to be the case in kind of your early career, but the one thing that I find really interesting about myself is I've never been a super extroverted guy. Like, I feel like the older I get, the more withdrawn I become. Like when I was in college, like it was no big deal, but I didn't care. I was making mistakes left and right. So I was just crashing everywhere. But like, the funny thing is, the more open I get on air, the more I want to be not as open when I'm away from the radio. And it's, I don't know if anybody else has run into that kind of conundrum, because like radio and writing have super been outlets to me, because I'll tell any story if the microphone is on or if I've decided to put fingers to keyboard. But like, for instance, I went to my girlfriend's Christmas party a couple years ago and I didn't know anybody. And I just kind of stood off to the side because I was there and they were doing like a gift exchange. And I was just kind of, you know, being a boyfriend or whatever. And someone walked up to me and was like, how are you not the life of the party? And I was like, I generally don't talk to strangers. That's kind of how it goes. But like, if you do, like I did stand up once because I lost a bit. So it's so weird to me that I feel that way. Because like, if it's something related to a microphone or radio, I'll go do whatever. I've been pied in the face by strangers on the street before and walked up and begged them to do it. But like, if I go walk down the street right now, not doing anything, I will be very much reserved and kept to myself. I don't know if anybody else goes through that. I don't.
And it's more, I'm sorry. It's more like, again, that goes back to, it's your outlet. Like it goes back to, that's your safe space. That's your safe haven. That's where you feel the most comfortable. There are a lot of introverted radio people that love to turn on the mic, be silly, be goofy, talk a lot, be energetic. And then as soon as the mic's off, you're like, okay, I'm out of my safe space now. I'm going to go back to being introverted to myself because that's where I'm comfortable when the mic's off. And I totally get that. I am kind of the opposite, kind of to a point.
Okay.
I've learned to be more extroverted and more energetic both when the mic's on and when the mic's off, only because I was so, so, so shy into myself before I got into radio. And I didn't like the way that felt. And I didn't like the way having lack of confidence and having lack of ability to form a sentence properly. I didn't like the way that felt. So as soon as I got into radio, learned how to do all of that stuff properly, and use self-deprecation for,
yep.
for comedy instead yep. of, you know, like just self-withering.
Yeah.
It was for the best. And I've learned to be more energetic and use it to my advantage and instead of staying so to myself. But it does make sense that you find your, we all have our safe space. We all have our safe havens. And once you get out of that, you go to the next safe space, which is, you know, for you, it's within yourself, to yourself, which is perfectly understandable because people, some people suck.
That's fair. That might be the truest thing said on this podcast.
Some people are the best and others just, terrible.
No, you're right. And to be honest, I think I actually legitimately just had a conversation with my dad about this because my brother and I are super tight, but we're super different, even though we're really close. And creativity has always been kind of my outlet. But I think what I've come to find is like it's my outlet when I choose for it to be, as opposed to being like called upon to do it. And so writing, I think, has meant a lot for me for a long time. And I think radio just became an extension of that. Cause like, I legitimately, like, it's not that I don't like the attention or whatever, but I don't do it for that. Like, mm-hmm. to me, I'm in it, and this is going to sound snobbish, but I've come to realize it's true. And I've been honest with myself. Like, I kind of believe in the purity of the creative process. Like anything I do, like I've gotten really active on TikTok recently and I've been talking to people about it and they've been asking, cause I was gone forever. And I was like, I want to do it for me. If something comes out of it, like something goes viral, whatever, awesome. But if not, like I'm making stupid videos because I think they're funny. And when I write, I write because I want to write. Or when I'm on the radio, generally I'm not on there thinking, oh my gosh, I hope people recognize me somewhere. And like, hey, it's AJ. And as opposed to, nah, I like doing it. I like entertaining. I was always kind of a class clown. And then when I went through just all the crap that I went through in terms of needing to go to therapy and all the stupid stuff with my family, it was initially a safe haven to just do literally anything else than think about it. And then it became like, here's the stuff that happened in my life. I hope it doesn't happen to you. But if it did, you're not the only one.
For sure. Absolutely. So do you do the same thing with like your sports podcast that you relatively do with your morning show as far as like the same approach to it? Or is it just like, okay, this is what we're talking about. This is how we're doing it. Let's do it. Does if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I got you. I guess it would say it's the same approach. The more I do radio, the more I realize that I need to do more and more planning, but I also don't function super great when like everything is down to the T. So I would say, yeah, it's a collection. It's three of us that are going to get together with a loose frame of topics and we can speak intelligently on them. But if it goes off the rails, it'll probably be in an entertaining way because we're still talking about the subject, but we get super mad about it, except once. Not this past episode, but the episode before, that one of the guys that was that's on the podcast filled in on my morning show with me because McCall was out of the studio a couple days. And we had this whole conversation. It was before Halloween. I've come to super believe in ghosts since I've moved to Utah. And I believe that we have one in our building. And he's, no, there's not. No, there's not. No, there's not. Well, the other guy that's on the podcast, his dad writes paranormal books based on experiences he and other people have had. And he did not know that about him. So I made him, I was like, all right, I'm going to make him tell ghost stories that he has experienced. And then he gets done with, he's like, no, he's not. No, he's not. And I'm like, oh my, come on. Like now you're just being ridiculous.
Paranormal activity stuff is my favorite thing. I believe I am, there is a lot of controversy with this, but I truly believe that every radio station has a ghost. I truly do, because the last, I've worked in two, and then my school's, my college's radio station, I believe all three have a ghost. And so I am, and you're not the only one to say that, you know, you think that your building has a ghost. So I am like under 100% belief that every radio station has a ghost, even if people aren't aware.
See, that's it. Cause I've been at this four or five. And I probably did not pay nearly enough attention. I know we've caught it on video. There's 100% one in this building. There's no way that anyone can tell me otherwise, but you know, if you believe in paranormal, there's other places. Northern Utah's nuts. So I'm just saying, if you ever want to trek up here, there's a lot to do in terms of paranormal.
Oh, that's awesome. I've always wanted to do ghost hunting. I've never actually gone
Gone twice.
and ex really? Okay. So is that as much fun as I think it is?
So the second time I went, we went this past Halloween weekend. It was okay. I personally didn't really get a whole lot about the experience, but that's not, this I went with professional ghost hunters, but in any given day, the ghosts are active or not. I can't say it was bad all the way around. My girlfriend's grandma, who passed away last year, the spirit apparently came through and they had talked to her for like 15 minutes. So obviously they had a
Wow.
amazing experience and they cried and it was great. The first time I went was way crazier. There was a lot more interaction and a ghost threatened to kill my girlfriend. So
Oh,
really, I think
no.
she's the one kind of having the experiences and I'm kind of along for the ride, but I highly recommend it. Like, even if you don't believe, I've seen enough at this point in my life that yes, 100% paranormal stuff exists. If I can quick sidetrack, this is exactly how I do everything that I'm involved in with a microphone. The thing that terrifies me the most, because a lot of people, we talked about this on the show a lot, and people talk about, I'm afraid of ghosts, I'm afraid of ghosts. Ghosts aren't the things you should be afraid of. A lot of them are like not that bad. The one that got me when I found it out is this paranormal entity called Black-Eyed Children. And they're basically spirits whose whole goal is to gain entry into your domicile or car. And the reason they're called
Oh.
that is because their eyes are black. And you don't really get to see them because they'll hold their eyes down and they have to be given permission, but they'll demand to get in. And it terrifies the crap out of me because people have had stories in the valley of them, and I don't have a screen door. So I'm legitimately worried that just one day they're gonna knock on my door and I'm gonna be like, even though they can't come in without my permission, I'm just gonna freak out. And then also there's a semi fear that one day some kid is gonna prank me. Like someone's gonna figure out where I live, and I've talked about it a lot on the show, and they're gonna do it, and I'm gonna punch a kid, and then I'm gonna have to explain why I punched that kid.
Oh my gosh, that terrifies me. Because you see all these movies about kids with black eyes and all. Okay, so I've never heard about that, but it makes total sense to me. But that is like, I'm more scared of like what I don't know about more than I am what I know about.
That's a legit thing to be fair. Have you heard of skinwalkers? This one threw me for a loop when
No.
I
Oh
so
God.
I apologize because I think I'm gonna get this correct. I want to say it's the Navajo tribe, but it's tied to a specific tribe, and they're basically medicine men who've gone evil, but they like just I'm gonna do not do it justice. There's what is it? History Channel did the Mystery of Skinwalker Ranch. They had season one that just got done. They're gonna do season two. That is nuts. My girlfriend binge watched it without me, but I've seen enough of it. But like they're basically, I believe they're medicine men that have gone evil, so they can transform into like sort of werewolfish slash coyote type creatures that have paranormal abilities. We did a topic. I had no idea when I was in Utah. We did a topic on my morning show when I first got here, and people shared some stories of their experiences because they're tied, I think, mostly to reservations, and there's a big one in the state of Utah, and hard pass.
So you 100% believe that they're real and
Yeah.
that,
There's a trail in Utah. I think it's called Moon. I want to say it's Moonlight Trail, and it's in a part of the reservation you are allowed to go on. And people have told me like you should go because there's encounters all the time. And I'm like, absolutely not. I'm not going to go. I will not chance that. Hard pass.
you imagine it would be like the scene from Harry Potter?
Oh
Where the
yeah.
professor turns into a werewolf without like thinking about it and like didn't realize that he forgot his potion, I would freak out. Absolutely not. I can't. I haven't even heard all of the stories. And just by what you're telling me and the fact that you believe that they're 100%, yes, absolutely exist, I cannot deal with that.
Google it. You will have nightmares. For all the Harry Potter nerds, Professor Lupin that were shouting during the podcast, that's who that was. And then my one of my podcast co-hosts, his dad is the one that writes the stories. When my brother and sister-in-law, they moved to Vegas. They drove through here when they moved out here a couple years ago. I let them read one of his books. My brother has not stopped cursing me because they slept on my couch, which was right next to a big screen door and right next to my front door. And my sister-in-law did not sleep the entire evening, and he will not let me live that down because I gave her that book to read. So just so we're all clear what we're dealing with, she couldn't get a wink of sleep that evening.
I love that. So, you know, moral of the story, read that if you want nightmares. If not, don't. Stay away. Stay
far. It's super interesting.
You know what's funny is that the only book that I've ever had nightmares of after reading was reading The Shining, which is extremely lengthy. But, oh, I could not sleep forever. For hours.
That's legit. It's a terrifying book and movie. Yeah, more
books and movie for sure. But the book just has details in it that I did not expect, especially after watching the movie first. And I could not believe what I was reading. I was like, okay, I'm going to let my mind wander. That seems like a good idea at 2 a.m. Of course.
The thing is, I'm really interested in paranormal. I do not do scary. I don't do horror movies. If I'm watching one, I have been arm barred to do it.
Oh, so you don't do scary movies. You don't do Halloweenish stuff like that. See, I love to be scared in a haunted house. I love to watch people be scared in movies. I love the indirect scary stuff. I love Halloween. It's my favorite holiday. I do not like the idea of me being haunted. I do not like the idea of me being scared by something that's actually real and attacking me or something like that, because I could not handle that.
For what it's worth, Kira, I think most people would second that.
True. That's fair enough. That is fair enough. But I know a lot of people aren't into scary stuff or Halloween specifically because they don't like to be scared. They don't like the scary stuff. They don't like that feeling. I like that feeling when it has nothing to do with me.
Yeah, I don't. The thing that's really obnoxious. Like, I don't do scary movies, but the thing that's really gotten me is I feel like it's become way more about gore, and I just
I can't do gore.
I made this thing as I was doing just randomly a TikTok live, and people were like, "You gotta watch a scary movie because you don't do it." So I watched Halloween Kills. People said it's good. The ending royally made me mad. Really makes me mad. And then somebody was like, watch Chucky, which, to be honest, So I don't feel like you should be afraid of Chucky, because anything that I can punt and defeat just doesn't seem that scary. But legitimately, as a middle school to high school kid, one of my best friends bought like the life-size one from Spencer's, and he would keep it in his room. I spent the night at his house like one time, and I was like, nope, no more. But I watched that, and I found it. I watched the most recent one, and I found the story to be solid. It was. I thought it was a decent movie, but ultimately, like, I'm yelling. I deal with horror movies by just yelling out plot holes and making fun of them, because like, I'm like, how do you lose to a 2 foot nothing doll? Like, he gets to drop on you with a weapon. Okay, I can understand, but any other time, like, come on.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't get the whole premise of Chucky. I really, like, why don't you just kick him into a goal? Like, I really do not understand. But I'm the same way with gore. Halloween, I fell asleep during the last 15 minutes of Halloween Kills, so I don't know how it ends.
That's the part that upsets me!
So I'm not as upset about that. And I actually enjoyed everything up until that point.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a lot coming from somebody who doesn't like any of the other ones, minus the first one, because the first one's a classic. But I don't like gore. That's why I love, like, paranormal stuff. I love, like, ghosts and spirits and demons. I don't love demons. I like, watching stories about demons.
I heard you. She's a part of the cult. We all heard it.
Jesus. Don't put that out there.
Yeah, right. One quick side tangent. Can we stop making shark movies? Every summer there's a new shark movie. I'm so sick of shark movies.
Okay, I gotta be honest. I'm not entirely mad at it. I don't like that there are so many Jaws movies, because it gets corny, or is corny to begin with. But I have to say that sharks terrify me so bad. Like, I came across a TikTok that was just a guy surfing, and it looks so pretty. He's like, yeah, this is awesome. And he's like doing all, and he's shouting, and then all of a sudden he falls and the phone goes underneath and it's a shark right there. And it terrifies me, because that's like it's paired with spiders. I don't do either one of those.
That's fair. Look, sharks are legitimately terrifying. If you were face to face with one, yeah, obviously, grab my pants. But like every summer, like every year, I make this plea on my morning show. I'm like, can we not do one? And then this year, it was the one where the couple, like, they take one of those planes that floats in Australia, and then the gang of sharks is like, you know what? F these people. We're here to stay until they die. And I'm like, no! Every time there's a shark movie.
I think I know which ones you're talking about, and I did not realize until you just mentioned it that there is actually a shark movie every year.
Every year.
I did not realize that. So I can definitely see where you're coming from. However, from the ones I've seen, minus Jaws, I'm still not mad at it. Just because I know that they make scary movies based on people's fears. Like, that's obviously why they make these movies, because it hones down on one specific fear. There's spider movies, there's shark movies, there's ghost movies and demon movies. They all are wrapped around this one specific fear, right? Dolls, Chucky, right? So I'm not mad at it because it hones, you need a recent movie about that fear. But they need to do it better. They need to do it way better.
Like, there's so many. Like, we just talked about Skinwalkers. I think a legit mermaid movie, like the evil ones, would be cool. Like, there's just so many other. We get it. Sharks eat people. I got it. I'm on. Oh no, I bet this movie's gonna go this way. A bunch of them are gonna die. I'm probably actually not gonna feel bad about any of them. And then the shark's gonna die.
They do need to do better about it because they're all the same for sure. But I think. Another one that really gets me, because it's more than just paranormal, because it's something that can actually happen, is As Above, So Below. Have you seen that?
Mm-mm. I have not.
Okay, so As Above, So Below, I won't spoil anything, but it's probably my favorite scary movie. And a lot of people are probably going to hate me for that. But it's my favorite because it's so... Like, you can watch, it's basically a documentary. You see these people going through the catacombs, and you see them go into the space that you can't, that's blocked off. And they go into, like, the pile of bones to get to the other side of that, and they end up going into the gates of hell. It is...
Oops.
Yeah, right? But it's so... You could see it happening. Like, you could see it totally happening in life.
Yeah. I've been to a sort of, not probably those particular catacombs, but they're terrifying. Those catacombs are.
I don't do caves. I'm too scared that it's going to collapse on me. I'm not even claustrophobic. I'm just scared that somebody's going to do something or step wrong or touch something, and it's just going to go and crash. Like, I'm sorry. I'm not getting pushed.
My favorite, I don't know if you'd classify it as a scary movie. I think it's more suspense drama. I loved the first Saw movie. I thought it was so good. I thought it was really clever. And then the second one I thought was a copycat. And then they were like, you know what everybody wants? Gore. And then I was done with them.
Unpopular opinion. I don't like any of the Saw movies. I like the premise. And I like that they made escape rooms for them because that makes sense. I don't like the movies themselves. I think that they're very predictable. I think that...
The twist ending on the first one.
I think that they're predictable. Like, I feel like it's just... I get the twist ending, and I'm not saying that, like, the effort wasn't there, because, you know, not everybody's going to predict it, but... I could see, like, you could totally guess it.
You heard it here first. Kira knew Darth Vader was Luke's father before everyone else did.
His name is Dark Father.
All right. Whatever. I'm blanking. I'm just going to say, thanks, Pitch Perfect. I got it.
I was about to say, we all learned in Pitch Perfect that his name is Dark Father. If you didn't know that already, because if you didn't Google it before then, you were way behind the times.
Yes. I took German in high school and college. I got it.
Okay. So I've done a little research on you. And by research, I mean I went on your Instagram and read your bio. But I want to know more about this bio, because I don't know you very well. You popped on a free-for-all show, and Sean was like, this is AJ. And I was like, hi, AJ, I'm Akira. And that was about it.
Yeah.
Pretty sure you stole Dong, and then, you know, we moved on with our lives.
Yeah.
But I want to know more. So it says that you're a gamer. It says that you love to travel, which is awesome, because that's like one of my main goals and a lot of people's main goals is to see more of the world. First of all, I'm a Twitch streamer, so I'm just now getting into like all of the gaming. What games do you play? What's your forte?
Probably the one I spend the most time on is probably shooters and sports games. Some of my favorites. I hate to say this because I've hated the last two. I'm really loyal to the Halo series because I'm an Xbox guy. I've played half of the Assassin's Creed series because there's so many of them. It's unfortunately gotten to the point being on the morning show has taken away some of the time. I go through stints with it, but the big thing that I do is usually play with my friends back home to stay connected to them. I'm supposed to play later tonight Back for Blood for the first time with them. And all I've heard for a month, because my Xbox died, so I had to get a new one, is you're going to cry. It's going to be terrible. We're not going to have a good time. And I'm like, yay. So it's become, I still like to play, and I go through stretches where, like, this is super nerdy, but I'm proud of this accomplishment. So I don't, what system are you on, Kira?
I do PC.
PC, okay. So on Xbox, the reward system is gamer score. So every game comes with certain achievements, things you can achieve, right? So generally a game comes with, you can max out at 1,000. So starting January of 2020, fueled by the pandemic, I achieved 1,000 gamer score for, I want to say, 15 straight months, which is kind of pathetic, but still an accomplishment I'm mostly proud of.
Wow. Is that all you did for 15 months?
Kinda, yeah. Well, because if you think about it, like, sports shut down, which is like my number one interest, and we couldn't travel. Travel shut down. So my life was working home, so.
Fair enough. I mean, I'm not even gonna like judge you for that, because for 15 months, at least the pandemic was just thriving. So I totally understand that. And I think a lot of people were doing the exact same thing that you were doing. Just not as good, I don't think.
Yeah, I had a blast with it. The Telltale games I highly recommend to anybody. They're a lot of fun. The Batman one I loved. I've played some of the Walking Dead ones. I recommend those. I like the Assassin's Creed series. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that stood out I really liked. I gave up on Call of Duty. Battlefield's not bad. I played the absolute crap out of Diablo 3 with my friends, and that's the only one I've played. I like that game. I don't know. There's a random assortment. I try not to lock myself into a specific set of games, because I have a bunch of my friends kind of have their games mostly. It's mostly shooters, and so if they're not playing that, then they're not playing anything else. So I try to be a little bit more open-minded.
So I am trying to get more into different games, because I mostly play Rocket League, and that's kind of my forte, and that's my little comfort bubble. Because I can, you know, I started with it, and I'm trying to get good at it before I move on to something else. Because
makes sense.
Because I suck. But I dabbled a little bit in Dead by Daylight.
I've heard a lot about that.
I suck. I am terrible. Like, you think of the worst player ever, I'm probably worse. It's so bad, but it's fun. It is so much fun. I don't care what anybody says. Even if you suck at a game that you play, whatever it is, if it's car soccer, like Rocket League, or
describe a game badly.
Car soccer. No, but so I have a friend that said, like, what did she say? It's go-kart sports, or it's go-karting, fair. Go-karting, I mean, in a field.
to be honest, like, if you had the chance, if anybody's seen Top Gear, they've done it a couple times. If you had a chance, if someone's like, we're gonna get these beaters and we're gonna play car-sized soccer, like, who's not doing that?
It's so much fun, and it's so pretty. And I have to say, the soundtrack, the playlist that they have is the best music I have ever heard for a, and it doesn't say much because I haven't heard a lot, but that I've ever heard for a game. It is awesome.
I have no idea what other systems this is on, but I highly want to recommend this, and I don't even own the game. My buddy bought this game called It Takes Two, and it's pretty cool. I know he has it on Xbox. I don't know if it's on anything else. So if it isn't and you can't get it, I apologize. But the premise of the game is these parents are going through a divorce, and your kid cries and the wish comes true. So you become these dolls that have to work together. It is the coolest game because everything, it's like different level to level. Like you get 2D side scroller and you get all these action games. It is so awesome. I highly recommend it for anybody because it's not overly difficult. The story's interesting, but like each chapter is an entirely different gameplay. And so you get like so many different things. I highly recommend it. It is so cool.
I wonder if you can get it on PC. buffering. My bad. It's kind of my thing. I'm not limiting myself to a certain set of games, but I'm limiting myself to game systems. I'm probably not going to go out of PC.
Gotcha.
Simply because I don't want to buy another console.
That's fair. That's they get kind of, I mean, you can't get a new one anywhere. This one always fascinates me. So before you played now on PC, did you play games before?
No. This is my first go around with games. Okay. I was kind of like that. Oh my God, I'm going to play because the cute guy I like is playing. I was that type of girl. But other like actually playing, actually enjoying it. This is my first go around.
Okay. Cause one of my favorite things when you get on this discussion is everybody kind of has the game that triggers the start of their gaming. And then like, you could also do like top five or whatever, but I'm always curious to see like where it starts. And it's always an interesting story because it'll give you a little bit of insight, I guess, into how long they've been into video games, but it's also interesting to see if you get something unusual.
It's definitely been less than a year, and Rocket League queued it. That's the end of my story.
I believe it. By the way, I want to be very clear, and I will say this after I say what I'm going to say. I don't think Kira's one of these things, but there's a statistic that came up on our prep service, and I talked about it on our radio show, and I want to make a TikTok about it. But it was, what is an opinion that will trigger people? And my opinion that I wanted to share was, I hate that nerddom has gone mainstream. And what I mean by that is, it's super cool, don't get me wrong, that video games and streaming and all that's cool. What I hate about it is I feel like it's been capitalized on to take advantage of people who are into it, because part of being a nerd is at some point you grew up liking something that everybody made fun of you for. And so like there's a scar that comes along with it because you've been into it. But I feel like what happens is at some point everybody gets made fun of for something, and then it goes mainstream, and then everybody's like, oh yeah, this is super cool. And then everyone's like, yeah, it was cool the whole time. And now you're a poser.
At some point being a nerd became cool. And well, like, it ruined everything.
I just feel like certain things become mainstream. So then there's something else, and I don't know what it is, but there's something now that people are getting made fun of, and it's part of nerd culture. And then in 15 years, everyone will be like, this is awesome. Cause like, if you think about it, like streaming and all that stuff 15 years ago, people were like, ugh, what a loser. Like, do something with your life. And now everybody does it. And I'm not saying, like, if you're good at it or you're super into cosplayers and you're, like, living out your nerd fantasy, whatever it is, that's great. Like, I'm not here to put down anyone experiencing something that I think is great. I'm not saying I should be the only one to have it. I just hate that I feel like it's been capitalized on by people who, like, didn't go through with it. Like, didn't earn their – it didn't take the scars along with it because they liked it the whole time.
Yeah, they weren't made fun of as a kid for it. They grew up and then became the nerd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jerks.
I
don't think Kira's doing that.
No, I'm not. I'm definitely the person, though, that didn't. My growing up, though, with that is a little bit different because I was surrounded by nerds and I was a nerd in a different retrospect. So it was kind of like we all just co-inhabited together as, like, we were all nerds, but we were all nerds about something different.
Right.
And mine wasn't gaming, but I was friends with a bunch of people who were. So yeah, it's kind of like I just got in the indirect scars, I guess, for lack of a better phrase. But I definitely do see how it's definitely a societal thing. It's definitely a Twitch becoming way more popular now thing, to where it's like, oh my God, they're streaming this. Oh my God, they're streaming Rocket League. I want to play Rocket League. Oh my God, they're streaming Halo. That looks like fun. They're reacting and they have a chat and they're making money for some people. They're doing this, they're doing that. I want to jump on that because it looks like something enjoyable. It looks like something I could do. But they definitely need to go. It's kind of like you have the people that didn't grow up with siblings and you have the people that did grow up with siblings. And then you have the people trying to relate to each other and you just can't. If you didn't grow up with three older brothers, you cannot relate to that person.
I feel like to put it in the simplest terms, this can make me sound really petty and I sort of am, but I feel like it's like, so there was like, everybody has the same experience in some capacity. So you're growing up and there's like the top of the social food chain, the cool kids. Right. And mm-hmm. So what I feel like is the top of the food chain is trying to move in again, because now it's mainstream and they're like, no, I'm one of you. I'm a nerd. 'Cause I put on glasses and play video games. It's like, no, you're not.
I do also feel like I agree entirely. And I also feel like there are people from other, like, this is kind of where I'm coming from, is where there are people who are coming from other sides of nerddom.
Yes.
Maybe not in, right. You know, the comic books and the video games. And they're kind of weaving into that. They're coming from something else that they were a nerd about, and they're weaving themselves into the other side, which I think is a little bit different just because they got a different set of scars. But I video games weren't always cool.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, again, yeah, totally, I'm good with all nerds. Like, if you were a nerd that didn't do video games, but you were a nerd, still respect. Like, I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at basically the top of the social food chain that has moved in and pretended like I was here the whole time.
Right. Exactly. You have to earn your spot.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So, traveling. I'm going down the list. The next thing on the list is traveling. You mentioned it earlier. What is your favorite place that you've been to, and where do you want to go? Do you have any plans?
What was my favorite place? That's tough. I would say internationally. That's tough. It's probably tied internationally. I really loved Venice. Very relaxing. It's beautiful. Italy as a whole was gorgeous. I really loved Amsterdam. I loved the vibe of it. That was my last trip that I went on top of some other places. Those would probably be my top two. Like Venice was just beautiful. Italy was just beautiful and vibrant, and there was just so much history and stuff. Amsterdam was surprisingly like I know when you think of Amsterdam, like, yes, shocker, AJ, it's super chill. Every drug ever is legal there. But like, for a city that big, it didn't feel that way. It felt very relaxed. And
I'm kind of jealous, gotta be honest.
I hear that from a lot of people.
Well, and it's not because of the obvious. It's, I want to see the Anne Frank house, and I've wanted to see it for like a couple decades.
I don't have words.
So I'm kind of just like, I eventually need to see that house.
It was, yeah, I don't have words for that. I wrote about it, actually. It was something like I was inspired to write the second I saw it and then stepped in it. That one, and then going to one of the other places that really touched me was going to the Vatican and going in to see the chapel ceiling. I can't think of what it is off the top of my head. Michelangelo painted it. I cannot think. Sistine Chapel.
We're gonna get like pummeled for this. Peter's, what is it? Peter's, it's Basilica. I'm gonna Google it. Hold on. Okay, it is. I know what you're talking about. Sistine Chapel. What is it called? Isn't there a name for it?
I don't remember now. I you know, you would think for something that I said really inspired me, I would be like that, but I can't.
Okay, and when I Google it, it just says the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. So we're just going to go with that.
Beautiful. And it's funny because, like, on that one specifically, and then there was a temple we went to when we were in, I want to say, I think we were in Tokyo. They, in both those places, I remember them standing out because people, they say, don't talk and don't take photography, and people don't listen. But I didn't, and I feel like, This I'm gonna come out of this podcast, but like, oh my gosh, AJ's kind of a snob, but like, it meant something to me to like do that and not talk and not take pictures in both those places. Like, I felt like, yeah, these places are amazing, and I want to honor them. And so it was those two and the Anne Frank House are probably Roman Colosseum as well. They're probably the four places that really stood out to me that I've been lucky enough to visit.
And that's definitely not making you a snob, by the way. It's making you, it's showing that you have respect for, like, signs of a culture. So, definitely not a snob.
Yeah, I just, it's self-realization and self-evaluation is something I focus on a lot. And, like, just, I don't know, that's one of those things that, like, I was like, they said don't do this, I'm going to do this. So, or I'm not going to, whatever. I followed the rules.
You followed the rules. Yes, absolutely. Okay, and then what about someplace that you want to go?
Probably top of the list is a tie between Egypt and Australia.
Okay.
I really also want to do the Orient Express. I would really love to do the Orient Express, but to places to go, it'd probably be a tie between Egypt and Australia.
Okay, so I totally get where you're coming from both. Australia has a bunch of out of this world animals and insects that I don't want to see the life-size versions of. Yes. But I've always been interested in that. But I definitely see the appeal. But yeah, I'm sorry, a 2-foot spider.
No.
With fur on it, looking at me on my wall, I can't.
No, I totally get it. You know, there's that. There's all the jellyfish, because of course, if I go to Australia, I want to see the Great Barrier Reef.
I forgot about that.
Those all can put you in a box in a hurry. No, you're 100% right. Australia is basically a land of things that will kill you in a hurry and ask questions second, but I want to.
Definitely. And I think that the culture too, I totally understand where you're coming from. Egypt,
I was just gonna say, ironically enough, when we were in, I believe it was when we were in Amsterdam, one of the restaurants we ate was a burger place started by four Australian guys.
I love that.
Which to me, like, they had a picture, I took a picture of them, it's on my Instagram actually, and I posted it, and I was like, no one can convince me, like, these four didn't show up and get hammered. And then one of them, they were like, we should start a restaurant. They're like, we should totally start a restaurant. And then one of them went and sold their tickets. And like, I guess we got to do it now. And then it worked out. Because I was like, Australian food in the middle of Amsterdam. Like, all right, I guess.
I mean, it worked out for them. So
it was pretty good, actually. Yeah.
I mean, I'm so fascinated. If I could just go there and bubble wrap. And just not, like, my own little bubble. And just not, like, I know for a single fact that I will not come in contact with something that will eat me alive in my sleep. I totally would go in a heartbeat.
I think for the most part, if you stay to the coast where most of the cities and population are, I think you'll be all right. I think most of that is kind of in the outback.
I saw an interview with Melissa McCarthy. They did... I think it might have been with Ellen. I don't remember who, but she was on a Skype call. And she was in Australia at the time of the interview. And she's like, I can't describe to you my fear of all of the animals I have seen that I didn't even know existed. She's like, there's like a hybrid of certain animals. There's a hybrid of insects that I didn't think even were on this earth. And I'm sorry, if Melissa McCarthy's telling me that in a Skype interview, you better believe I'm believing her. And I'm just putting it in the back of my head.
That's fair.
and using it. Yeah, using it every day. I mean, believe me, though, if I ever got the chance to, heartbeat. Absolutely. But I'm going in bubble wrap and I'm creating my own little bubble.
That's fair. Yeah, safety first.
Yeah, safety first. So I'm not dying by, you know, a hairy tarantula that's the size of me. No. Yeah. So Egypt, is that you want to see, is that the culture that you're like, what are you most interested in? Is that the culture? Is it the pyramids because of the history?
Most of it is definitely the history. History was a big thing in my family, in my home growing up. And so definitely the thing that's nuts to me, and I really need to find this meme because I try to reference it all the time, but it was something along the lines of like, I believe it's, Jesus's death is closer to the opening of the first Pizza Hut than it is to the building of the last pyramid. Like they are just so old. And so it's a big part of that. A little bit the culture. I'm always interested to see how it goes. Cause like people ask me that because I've been, I've been to Europe. So I've been to Italy, Spain. What is it? Netherlands is Amsterdam and, Belgium in Europe. And I've been to, Japan, South Korea, and China, Hong Kong. And people always ask me like, how did it go? Like, were people jerks to you? And for the most part, like it really hasn't been bad. A lot of those places, surprisingly enough, you can get by with English for the most part. And so like, I'm interested in the culture shock because I don't see Egypt being that way. I feel like that'll be a lot more tougher and it'll be really interesting to see. And it's just so much like the Asian culture, the Asian countries I finished were, they're different, but like, it was still easy enough. Like they're, you know, America, I think has enough influence or enough ties to those places. It was fine. And Europe is not, I think, a whole lot different, but like the Middle East is going to be entirely different. And so like, that'll be really interesting as well, because I always find it super fascinating to see how well I can manage to not, make a jerk of myself and to be polite and try and not make like draw attention to myself. It's kind of a, I wouldn't say a fun challenge, but like a goal to do, because the truth of the matter is I'm not in my country, so I don't get to make the rules. I'm trying to follow and be peaceful and I want to see the world. And so part of that is doing so while following traditions and cultures and stuff like that. But most of it for Egypt for me is the history.
For sure. And I mean, with that, I mean, always comes to culture because there's nowhere else is like the United States. And I mean that both in a good and bad way. Like there's so much other stuff out there. There's so many other types of people and culture and land and languages. There's just so much out there. And there's different, you know, there's different ways of living. There's different politics. There's different like inclusions. And it's just so fascinating to think that, you know, there's so much, like, I hope that by the time I get to a certain older age that I have been able to see a lot of other cultures and been able, like, you've traveled a lot and a lot of people. And I mean, it may or may not feel like that to you, but it's more than a lot of people. Like it's more than a lot of people can say that they have. And I think it's a goal. I mean, at least for me, it's a goal to see other people, other places, you know, and experience something outside of this country.
Yeah. It's super fascinating. Doing that. Cause like, for instance, Amsterdam was super chill. So like we had no issue moving through and talking to people. And then like the other half of that trip that I went on, we were in Belgium and we went to three different cities. We were in Bruges, Ghent, and whatever the capital is that I cannot remember off the top of my head. And so the first two, Bruges and Ghent, depending on which part of Belgium it is, it's like almost split in half, like half is Dutch and half is French. And like the interesting thing, and this is furthering a stereotype, but I found it to be true. The Dutch part influence and the Dutch side of Belgium was super nice. And it was really pleasant to be in. The French side was not as fun to deal with. And so it was really fascinating that way. And to see different things, honestly, and I didn't mention this yet. I love traveling too. Cause I love food. like one of the things that annoys me so much is my boss now, because I've eaten enough lunch with him, and my former one of my best friends, and I lived with him for 3 years. They're those people who use the phrase, "I know what I like, and that's what I like." And it just, it blows my mind, because it's a more microcosm of the traveling thing. But like, it's like, because I got into an argument with him once, because like my former roommate, he loves Americana. He'll eat Mexican food, and then that's it for him. He doesn't like sushi, he doesn't do Chinese. And I'm like, there's so much food. There's soul food. There's Greek food. There's Middle Eastern food. There's Asian food. I mean, how can you just say that those are the two choices you want? There's so much good food out there. And it blows my mind. But like, that's, to be honest with you, two of the pillars, fundamentals, whatever you want to say, that inspire me in terms of not wanting that to be the case. I think I just saw the updated version statistic. There was one the other day. It's like 1 in 6 people will not move away from their hometown. And the one that I heard when I moved back to Indiana the first time from New Mexico was something along the lines of, I want to say it's more than half of people will never live further than 60 miles away from their hometown. And that, it just blows my mind. I'm not saying that you can't like be like, jackpot, where I grew up is the best place ever. But like, it blows my mind that people don't want to see more, like even in the United States, because like each state is different. Like I love road tripping as well, and I've covered most of the West Coast at this point. But like here in Utah, I'm kind of a unicorn in even more so when I talk about traveling, because people here don't seem to travel unless it's for family. Like one of my first year here, my girlfriend and I went out to Phoenix for Thanksgiving and New Year, and then we went to Denver for Christmas. And I get asked every time, are you going, where are you going for the holidays? And I say, and they go, oh, do you have family out there? No. Do you know someone out there? No. Then why are you going? To see it. I haven't been there before. But yeah. It boggles my mind, because like I kind of get the big city thing. Like a lot of people, I think, have a little legitimate fear of dealing with big city, whether it's fear of stereotyping crime or traffic or whatever, because driving in big cities is a nightmare. And I get that to a certain extent. But I'm like even if you just love everything about Utah or whatever, like maybe there's something out there in California or Nevada or Montana or, you know, Denver's the other side, like that you also super like. I'm not saying you have to move or anything. It just blows my mind. Like, I feel like it's an insult to our own history as people to not understand, not try to grasp a little bit more of what is out there and then what else we can experience. Because if you think about it in terms of population and history, every person's like a speck on the timeline. People have existed for 6,000 years now, and there's 7.5 billion people in the world. And I'm not saying to make anybody feel insignificant. I'm just saying it like we're more connected than ever. And I feel like so many people don't take advantage of it. Like there's so much out there that you don't even know you don't know. And each time I take in a little bit more of it, I just find myself more fascinated by it. And I just want to know more, because it's so interesting. State by state is different, and country by country is hella different. And I don't find it intimidating. I found it amazing, because you can take part in it. And I feel like it makes me a better person to experience that. It makes me more well-rounded and more understanding.
I think that it goes right back to the idea of safe space. Like you stay with what you know, because it makes you feel comfortable, and it makes you feel safe. It makes you feel safe in your little bubble. You know what's there. You know what to expect. You don't grow as a person as far as cultured. You're not as cultured as you could be. You're not learning everything that you could about other people and about other places like you could, because you can't learn that from a textbook, you know? No. But I do see where people would come from with wanting to stay in their bubble. And it does blow my mind, though. I don't like that. I really don't. And if you, I have a couple friends. My mom had a few pen pals when I was a kid, that one from Germany, one from Poland. And I have an aunt and cousin from Poland as well. And their culture is so different. Like, yeah. It's Europe, just from what I know of Europe, that just happens to be, you know, what I have been told about. But their culture, their way of living is so different. And in certain places, they're a little bit more open-minded than others, or other places are a little more closed-minded than others, but they're so different. And I feel like they have been taught, and they have, you know, grown in a way that they are comfortable with expanding their horizons in other places more so than a lot of people here are. And that's kind of unfortunate, because like you said, it's so interesting. It's so refreshing. It's so like mind blowing to see other places and other people and how they live, breathe, react, you know, to different things.
No, 100%. Like I feel like you said, in Europe, there's places that are more open-minded. There's places that just seem more lax. And that's refreshing. Like, don't get me wrong, when we first traveled, I've been to Canada and Mexico before, but my first trip was the one to Spain and Italy. And part of me was like, okay, how is this going to be being like somewhere completely unknown, no language? And, you know, it's initially intimidating, but you can do a little bit of planning and set up. You know, we take mobile hotspots with us now, so we can access Wi-Fi whenever we need it. But it's just refreshing because it just kind of sort of ends up like, here's some loose plans, and then we'll just kind of follow our feet for the day. And then you just kind of engage with it in a way that I don't know that you could even do, like, if you went to like a different state. Cause like, in all honesty, there's differences, don't get me wrong, state by state and city by city. But, you know, at the end of the day, you get kind of lost. You can still sort it out. You turn on your phone, you talk to someone, whatever, and you get it sorted out and whatever. But like, yeah, it just, I think it was refreshing to challenge ourselves from the standpoint of like, we're just going to completely immerse ourselves in this, and then whatever happens, happens. And it's just, I was intimidated the first time. Asia, I was a little bit intimidated too, because I thought the language difference was going to be a little bit tougher to deal with. And it was a similar experience, but it's just like, I talk to people about it, and people, and the thing that I think frustrates me the most when I talk to people is there are people like, I wish I could do that. And the crazy thing is, like, I get it. Financial means is definitely something everybody has to overcome, but it's really not that bad if you put a little bit of planning to it. Because once we talk about dollar figures to people, people are like, oh, well, that's not that bad. And we're like, exactly. So if you want to do it, go do it, because it's amazing.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's, I have been wanting to take a Europe trip for a while and just hop around. And I mean, the main thing is financial means, for sure. But I also have not put a whole lot of effort into planning anything. And it's definitely my fault. It's definitely, you know, the other people who want to be a part and take part. It's their fault too. You know, we haven't planned. yeah. But it is something that now that I'm getting to the point to where I can call myself an adult, which is disgusting.
Congratulations.
I don't like it.
It stinks.
But as far as financially, it's to a point to where eventually soon, hopefully, but as the way I'm thinking is that it would be, you know, financially able to do it. And I would find the means to do it now compared to when I was 16 and I was relying on somebody else's, you know? So,
yeah, I mean, that's good.
No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, that's one of the things for me. I grew up lower middle class. And so like traveling is always, I could think that traveling was always something I wanted to do. And I, to be honest, I'm lucky enough. My mom kind of advanced up the whatever class food chain a little bit. So like my brother and I recognize that we were lucky enough that like we've been to I've been to Hawaii twice, we've been to the Virgin Islands, we've covered a good chunk of the United States, and we recognize that we're lucky enough. And so that, I think my mom and dad deserve a little bit of credit instilling that in us. And then we got to the point, like you're talking about, like we became adults, and then we had adult money, and then we're like, what do we do with this? And then we're like, I want to see the world. And then it's so easy for so long, I think, to talk yourself out of it. And then finally, like, we just, he deserves all the credit. My brother does all the planning. He's who I travel with when I go internationally. And so we put it together, and it was like, we're going to do this. And then it becomes almost like a drug, because we're like, this was amazing. part of you, like, I think just being out of your comfort zone to that extent, like, part of you is definitely happy to go home and kind of get back and recharge a little bit. But it's always when we get back, or actually even when we're on the vacations, we always end up having a conversation, right? Where do we want to go next? Who wants to do this? And so it just becomes addicting, I think, because it's just so amazing to, like, see, like, the thing that dawned on me the most was when, like, when we went to, so the United States, I love history. And besides Native American culture, which is kind of tough, I think, to see at times, like the United States, you know, 1700s, right, is the history. And then you go to, we went to Italy and Spain. Now you're talking, what, you know, earlier than that, you know, several hundred years as opposed to a couple hundred years. And then we went to Asia and you're like, these are civilizations that are thousands of years old. And it dawned on me, I was like, this is insane, because, like, I'm in a place where people have existed for so long, and it doesn't dawn. And I don't feel like I can fully appreciate it, but it's just nuts, because I'm there and I recognize, I'm like, there's been so much that has happened here, and I am now lucky enough to at least stand in its presence. And it's just,
yep.
It's one of those things where it's like fascinating, but also intimidating, because it's like, again, you don't know what you don't know. And so then I'm just dipping my toe into that pool. And then it's like, there's all this stuff, and blows my mind.
And, oh my God, what was I going to say? Oh, Jesus. Oh no. Do you ever have those moments where you're like, okay, I know exactly what I'm going to say. And as soon as it becomes the time for you to talk, it's like, I just see a black space in yep. my mind, yeah. and I don't know what I was going
to
say.
100%. I have a bad habit of being like, I have 2 points to make. And I start talking about point number one. And I was like, I forgot what the second point is, because I got into the first one.
That's happened to me all the time. I'll plan it out in my head too. I'll be like, okay, this is how I'm going to go into point two.
Yep.
And then I'll do that. I'll do the segue, and I'll be like, you know what?
100%.
Never mind.
So into point one, and I'm like, and point two was, I don't remember. It'll come back to me, but I forgot what it was.
For sure. But going back to that, I guess this is not what I was going to say, but it's something that I have thought of. It's definitely, again, a way to grow. And you can't learn by reading a textbook. Anything. You can't learn anything by just reading a textbook. Like, you have to do, you have to experience, you need to see, and you need to, you know, be able to know that, as you said, you dip your toe into that place, into that culture, into that experience. And it's something that a textbook just can't give you. And I hope, I probably sound very selfish just talking about me, but it's the only thing I have to go off. But it's something that I hope that I get to experience someday. I went on a cruise to Mexico.
Surprisingly, haven't done a cruise.
It's awesome. I have to say that if you have any motion sickness, Dramamine is going to be your best friend,
right?
Because it was mine. But it's so much fun. The cruise itself is obviously a lot of fun, because you get all of these activities, and you have, you know, they have a spa on board, and you can do all the stuff. But there's something about stepping on land that you know is not where you're from, and looking around and being like you know that you step off a plane, you're like, this is not where I'm from, but it's exciting, and it's refreshing, and I'm repeating words we've used, but it's just so mind-blowing that you can look around and be like, this is not where I'm from, this is so cool, like, that's different, like, or like, oh, that's the same, that's like similar to what I have back where I'm from, or oh, like, these people are like, this is how they act, this is how they maneuver, this is what they do. And it's beautiful.
100%. Like, I think I would classify it as being lost without actually being lost. That's, I think, how you feel.
Yeah. Like, being, that's actually the perfect description. Being lost without actually being lost. It's being lost without the fear of being lost. Like, you're not scared and that you don't know your way around. You're just, like, you're bliss. It's lost bliss.
Yeah, the nice thing too, like we learned a lesson, so we bring mobile hotspots. But the nice thing too is sort of disconnecting from the world, because like that's one of the things I've come to really enjoy. Like, because like when you vacation, like when we go on road trips and stuff, like don't get me wrong, like you can ignore your phone, but it's completely different when we're somewhere like in a different country, because like we'll check in periodically when we have Wi-Fi or whatever. But like you're just. Whoever you're with is who you're with, and it's refreshing to just kind of actually disconnect.
Yeah, it is. And it's hard to... Technology is great until it isn't. Yep. Like, technology is and always will fail eventually, just because that's the way it is. Nothing's perfect. Everything, you know, nobody, nothing is perfect in this world. We saw this at the beginning of this episode when technology was not our best friend.
It's true.
But it has also been our best friend. Like, it is our companion on every trip we have. It is our go-to. We have a little block that we take with us everywhere. We have our big blocks that we stare at every day. And it's definitely when you go and to experience something, you want to take pictures and you want to, because you want to capture the moment and keep it forever. That's the whole point of taking pictures and video. But there's also something of being in the moment. And like you said, disconnecting.
Can I just say, I love that you said that, because one of the things I made a point of doing when I went on this last trip to Amsterdam and stuff is I've come to despise social media, and I won't go completely off on this tangent or whatever, but like I've come to despise this social media because I feel like so much of it now, not now, but re-emphasized even more so, because it's always been kind of the case, has been taking away, like you said, from the moment. So as opposed to living in the moment and then trying to capture what you already experienced, you try and set up the right experience for social and then live in the moment. And like, yep. If I could put it in an example, when we went to a museum in, I believe it was in Amsterdam, and it has one of the biggest libraries in the world. And the part of the museum, like as you take the tour, if you don't go actually in the museum, you can see from the top and you see shelves and shelves and shelves. And it was amazing to me to be standing there, because they have books that are 1,000 years old. And I'm like, that is amazing that they have recorded history. And I watched people like set up and do the perfect pose and take a picture. And I took a picture of just the library by itself. And I posted it with the caption, like, pretend I'm taking this perfect social media pose or whatever, because I don't actually care what's here. Let me just put a perfect caption, like, you don't know what you don't know, or knowledge is power, or whatever. Because, like, I get so fed up watching what I would just classify as general fakeness. Like, and I know how social media works. Like, we're both in radio. It's a huge part of it. I get it. And I'm going to be hypocritical about it, because I'm going to operate somewhat in that realm. But like, that's one of the things I love about vacation too, is like, yes, I will take pictures, but I will take pictures after I've experienced the moment. I don't try and capture the perfect moment on social media, because yeah, I'd like to share it, but like ultimately I care more so about what I experienced before I go out and go try and create the best posts or best video with likes. And so I've come to really, traveling has made me think about, and then this profession, honestly, think a lot about social media. And it's honestly why I was off of it for a long time, because I have come to find, and I don't know if your experience is similar as mine, is I guess pulling back the veil a little bit, that there are plenty of people I've met that are super successful or referred to as such, that do well or whatever. And they are some of the not nicest people in the world.
I 100% agree.
And the problem is that there's these buzz phrases, and the one that drives me nuts is like the buzz phrase, like, I believe in you and I want to support everyone and stuff like that. And they'll post that stuff. And then you like actually come to meet them and they don't care. They really don't.
Well, and they don't care about, so there are a lot of people who are extremely nice when you meet them in person, and they are exactly who you think they are. And that's awesome. So I don't want to discount that, because there are people out there that are who they say they are and are who they put themselves off to be. However, going to your point of that, there is a lot of fakeness, and there is a lot of the idea that you have to, use your insecurity and make it like use it to your benefit and like make it so that, oh no, I'm not insecure. Like other people are insecure. And I think like
preaching to the choir.
Right. When people, well, when people use that stuff, that's where that comes from. They're like, oh my gosh, I have 15,000 followers and I am the greatest. When in reality, like you meet them in person and they're so insecure about everything. And they're like freaking out because their hair's out of place. And they're like, oh my, which don't get me wrong. I do the same thing, but I'm also insecure and I own it.
Yes.
But it's to the point that they use that insecurity to put on a facade that they are something that they're not. And that's where the fakeness goes in. And that's where they are like, you know what? Social media is working for me. This is where I can hide. This is where I can fake it until you literally make it. And I don't like that idea. It's definitely where we're at right now and where it's going. And it's a digital world is the world that we're getting into. But there's a different way to get into the digital world. There's a different way to use the digital context to your advantage. And that is something that that realm of the digital world is something that I am not a huge fan of. Because if you're going to do that, do it authentically, genuinely.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you. It's one of the things like I really struggle with social media for my like in radio like, or everybody, I guess now, because anybody can have, you know, any of the social medias and find success and go viral. So anybody's brand. But it's one of the things I struggle with because like on radio, I have complete control of it. When I write, I have complete control of it. And my social media, I should have complete control of it. But I feel like there's this set of like rules and parameters that have kind of been put in place that determine what successful is. And I naturally revolt against authority to begin with. And to just kind of build off of your point from my own perspective, it's something I've really frustrated. And so it's been frustrated by, and so I've withdrawn from it. Cause like, I talk a lot of on my show and just in general, like if you're inspired by anything I say, that's great. I don't want anyone to necessarily feel like they know me. Like I want everything you interact with. I promise to make it as 100% me and own it as I can. So like, I don't want you to see something like I think it's attributed to Mark Twain. I don't know if it actually is, but the person who tells the truth all the time doesn't have to remember what they say, right? And so like, I want that to be the case all the time. And you get kind of frustrated at times, I think, in this career because you are marked by, we've seen it, I think, specifically in radio now, right? You have to be successful. And so there's these sort of parameters that seem to be kind of the cookie cutter guidelines to do so. But it frustrates me because I'm like, I don't want to do something that, one, I don't enjoy doing, and two, is not me. And so I feel honestly repulsed at sometimes dealing with those people and finding out like people are like, this person is great and they're an example. And then I meet them and I'm like, this person sucks and I don't want to spend any time around them whatsoever. And so I struggle to do that because I struggle to deal with that because like I want it to be genuine and I do want it to be successful. And that's, but then I kind of go back and forth because everyone's like, you got to be able to, you know, you got to produce for your audience. They want to be able to find as many touch points. And I struggle with that because I'm like, I don't like living my life via social media. I have trouble at times doing that because it feels to me personally like braggadocious. And I don't operate like I'm anything different than anybody else. I just happen to get lucky enough to have a kind of cool job. So please don't laud me up above anybody else because I would genuinely, I think, tell the same stories on air as off air if I didn't work in radio or I got fired or whatever happened. And so social media is I have a finicky relationship with it. So it's really interesting. Like this all just spawned because you said the live in the moment thing. And that's one of the things I try to figure out. Okay, how can I do this while also balancing the aspects I need in a career that demands it?
Absolutely. I can't even say anything better than what you just said. Yeah, because it's astonishing to me that somebody can have two different personalities as far as who they are on camera and off camera and who they can put themselves off to be to somebody else. And then when you meet them in person, it's like, it's a disappointment, or you work with them or you work with them.
Yeah.
Or you're like, hey, let's work together. Let's do something together. Or you just happen to work with them and they're somebody totally different when you work with them compared to who they are in camera, who you see them as outside of that building. And it's kind of sad. And it's like, you would think it would be more authentic. you really, truly, you would think that something that makes them so successful and makes them put so much work into it, you would think that it would be more genuine, more authentic, more personable, more relatable. And it's not.
I think that's what it is for me too. Like when I write and I'm on air, I feel like I'm being reflective. So I feel like I'm like, what is coming out is what I feel. And I feel like social media can be that way, but I feel like for whatever reason, it feels like it's more projected. And so that's where I think I struggle with it, because like, I think that's what, like you talked about it. I think people kind of want to project the facade, right?
Yeah.
And so that bothers me. And so like, I struggle with that, 'cause like, I don't want to project anything. And so I have a hard time sorting out like what it is. And it's like, for instance, that's why I'll go through spats where I'm not on Instagram, 'cause I'm like, I don't feel like I have anything interesting to say, and I'm not going to fake that I have something interesting to post or whatever. And like, that's why I was off TikTok, 'cause I just was like, I don't feel like I have anything interesting to create, and I don't feel like my heart's in creating anything. So I don't want to lie about it. And so that's my issue I go through with social media specifically.
It's also a societal thing. Mainly a societal thing. I feel like society has told all of us that if we don't project our lives 24/7, then we're doing something wrong. And that's not the case. That is definitely not the case. Even the people who do project their entire lives, entire lives, like let's say Kardashians or any reality show, that's not 100% of their lives. First of all, they still have private lives that we don't know about, first. And second, you don't have to be that person. Society has taught us that that is something that you have to aim towards, where it's something that you just have to learn from and grow with. Where we're going with digitally, I really, like, there's so many different avenues that you can take that is not that. And it's just the one that everybody has honed in on. I've just recently got into making video projects.
Nice.
I am in love with it. I love being able to, I use DaVinci.
Okay.
And it is incredible. It is a beast, as I've heard it be described as, which is 100% accurate. There's so much to it. You could do so much with it. And I have just found so much love into just taking a bit from something and putting effects to it and making it, you know, my own, and just adding sound to it and making it just look and feel and sound great. That's digital. That's putting your emotions and your thoughts and your creativity to something and then projecting it without actually negatively projecting it. And that's what I mean by, like, there's so many different avenues of digital. There's so many different ways to produce something and to share your story, where it's not actually sharing a story on Instagram.
That's why I was happy to do this, because I think one of the things I really enjoy is since I like writing, I think one of the issues too is obviously short attention spans, right? TikToks, Instagram stories, short, sweet, to the point. And I think long form is so much more interesting. And I don't think that there's not necessarily an audience for it, but obviously it takes you have to be entertaining in what you deliver, but I think the right people have to find it. And I just find long form so much more interesting, because I've always found intellectual conversation so much more stimulating and so much more fascinating, because like, how much can you really know from 10 seconds at a time, as opposed to sitting down for an hour and getting into horror movies, video games, travel, social media thoughts, so on and so forth.
Yeah. And I am 100% a hypocrite. I'm going to say right now, I spend hours on TikTok just scrolling, because I find it so fascinating that even though I may not, you know, feel like I can make a video like that, I find it fascinating that you want to share about your pet snake. Like, I just find that so fascinating at 2 a.m. So I'm definitely a hypocrite. Do not get me wrong.
I'm on it. I make stuff for it. I'm with you. Like I said earlier, like, I'm going to be a hypocrite because I'm going to engage in it. But
100% total hypocrite. But it doesn't mean that we don't wish it was a different way. And it definitely something that like we can participate in, or you know, be in it and create stuff for it, and still wish like it wasn't that the only thing that was societally accepted. Like there, when there are so many other different way.
Yes. Ways.
Yeah.
Perceived and established value, as it were. What is your follower list? That's all I care about.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy because when I got the job that I'm at now, I was, you know, in the stage of getting to know each other a few months ago, and we were at the point where we were exchanging socials. Wow. And one of my bosses went on my page and was like, "Oh my gosh, you have so many followers." And I was like, that's what you see? Like, she went on, she was scrolling, she was like, "Wow, you have a lot of followers." And I was like, okay, first of all, I don't. First of all. Second of all, that's what you see. You don't see my story of me and my dog playing fetch. Like, you don't see the appreciation post of my aunts. You don't see all of the right. other stuff that I put, authentic, genuine, not fake effort into. Like, you just see what society has told you to look at first, and that is the followers. And it kind of like spoke to me a little bit, to where I was like, I'm in an industry where it's important that we have engagement both in the building and digitally and on social.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing that you're looking at. Which
yeah, was no, I'm with you. Yeah. It makes you feel like the discussion to be authentic also is kind of thrown out the window, right? Because like I hope to be genuine to me, but like at the end of the day, if it's not and the number count goes through the roof, then it seems like that matters more than being legit.
Right. And not to say that like that was their intent or that was, you know, the only right. thing, but that was what they said. So that just stuck with me. Which, you know, is not here nor there. I don't know how to form words evidently to make a sentence. not here nor there, but it is something that stuck with me. So it just, I thought that spoke to where we're at societally and also industrially, is that how you say that? Industrially?
Sounds right.
Sure. Words. I don't know. We don't talk for a living. It's fine. No. AJ, I appreciate you so much. Thank you so much for being on my podcast with me. And thank you for just being a great person to talk with.
thank you for inviting me. And anytime, I really appreciate it.
So where can people find you on socials? Where, if you want to be found?
Oh, yeah. After all that complaining, right? This would seem like the great place to plug. Everything, pretty sure everything is just at the AJ Knight.